Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the sunny city of Los Angeles, California. Home of the Chargers, who are on their way to take on the Patriots. Home of the Raiders, who are welcoming in the Dallas Cowboys this weekend. Home of LeBron and the Lakers. LeBron's still not playing, but the Lakers got Detroit, right? Detroit tonight? Yeah, I think Detroit tonight. Home of the Dodgers, who have Kershaw. Maybe they'll add a Bryce Harper. Maybe they won't. But more importantly, home of the Doug Gottlieb Show. Huh? Home of the Doug Gottlieb Show. All right, we're watching the Cliff Kingsbury press conference. Not sure if you've seen, but the Arizona Cardinals have changed their Twitter handle to read the Arizona Cardinals with a K. That because they've hired Cliff with a K, Cliff Kingsbury, as their head coach. Kingsbury, nattily attired, three-piece suit, about to accept the job as the new head coach of the Cardinals. Freddie Kitchens is your new head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Bruce Arians is your new head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And of course, we mentioned that the Green Bay Packers made a hire going back, was it like 2 days ago with Matt LaFleur? 2 days ago or so with Matt LaFleur. And we've heard a lot about, well, you know, it's the do you know shot? Do you know a way to Sean McVay, right? Do you know Sean McVay? If you do, you're hired. Do you know Kyle Shanahan? If you do, you're hired. And it's amazing to me the pushback we've seen on Kingsbury, for example. Here's what's funny about it. Cliff Kingsbury had a below 500 percentage as a head coach at Texas Tech, right? And so people are smartly and wisely pointing to that. If Nick Saban was hired as your head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, what would people be saying today? Oh, Saban sucked with the Dolphins, right? He's bad with the Dolphins. But they might say, hey, you know, had they signed Drew Brees like they wanted to and the doctors told him his shoulder, maybe then Saban would have made it. Now, I explained to people yesterday, and not everybody catches all the entire show, so let me re-explain something. I consider Brad Stevens a friend, and I think we would all consider Brad Stevens a great coach. And Brad Stevens hasn't said this specifically, but he's insinuated this to people that I know, and I've heard it from a bunch of other guys who coach in the pros that used to coach in college. And you ask them, would they go back to coaching in college after coaching in the pros? And they will tell you, hell no. And look, in basketball, as in football, the great thing about basketball is if you run a play in the NBA and the guy gets open, 9 times in 10, they make it. Do you know why? Because they're the best basketball players in the world. So there is a certain amount of, like, it's one thing to drop a play in the dirt. It's a completely other thing to have a drop play in the dirt, have it work, and have the ball go through the hoop. That's rewarding. But the number one reason that pro guys don't want to go back to college is because in the pros, you're coaching ball. In the college, part of what you do is coach ball. You worry about academics. You worry about recruiting. You worry about parents. You worry about your staff. You worry about your training staff. I mean, look, DJ Durkin got fired at Maryland because he fostered a culture that was seen as, by some, abusive because a kid died during a conditioning drill during a 80-degree day. You got to worry about your training staff, your strength staff. You got to worry about your tutors and everybody kind of working together. You got to worry about Title IX. You got to worry about Title IX? Yeah, that's right. If there's a dispute between a young man and a young woman on campus, you have to concern yourself with it, although you're not actually allowed to investigate it. You have to turn it over to the Title IX investigation. You don't just work for your athletic director. You work for the president. And if you're in a state school, you work for the state and all the donors. Sounds like fun, doesn't it? Yeah. And here's the other part. They don't actually care about all that other stuff unless something goes wrong. And then they want you to win more than the guy before. When you're coaching in the National Football League, it's about ball. Don't believe me? Aaron Hernandez. Aaron Hernandez was convicted of murder while playing for the New England Patriots. Murder. Hey, and accused and found innocent of a previous double homicide, which, if you follow the court case, probably did it. The fact that he walked is really amazing, but he was convicted of murder. Did anyone call into question? There's been a couple people like, hey, Bill Belichick, did he lose any credibility? Of course not, because that's not his job. When you're coaching the NFL, it's about winning football games. Right? When Jason Garrett had Ezekiel Elliott suspended for 6 games, did anybody say, hey, it's Jason Garrett's fault? Like, no. Well, did he foster about? No, because when you coach in the NFL, it's about coaching ball. It ain't about all that other stuff. And what's made Nick Saban unbelievable, what's made Roy Williams unbelievable, and Mike Krzyzewski unbelievable, what's made those guys the best is they're great recruiters. They're great organizers. They're great leaders. They understand how to solve problems, put the people in proper places, have the right protocol where, though they have to manage and oversee, they can still coach, but also have the best programs. It's a different job because you're not just coaching ball. And so to the people who are the naysayers about Cliff Kingsbury, that's fine. It's fair. But you aren't at a recruiting imbalance in Arizona like you were at Texas Tech and compared to the rest of the Big 12 and, you know, against the SEC. Like, look, all of these idiots who say they cover sports, they have no idea about the massive change at Texas Tech between the time that Mike Leach was there and Cliff Kingsbury was there. Here's what you don't know, okay? Here's what you don't know. When Mike Leach was there, Texas A&M was in the Big 12. When they left and went to the SEC, it totally changed things in terms of recruiting. A&M suddenly became a destination. A destination. Additionally, it allowed SEC schools to play yearly in the state of Texas, and it hurt the entire state's recruiting to maintain kids in the Big 12. Because the argument for the Big 12 was, hey, if you want to play Big 12 football, you want to play big-time college football in the state of Texas, you got to play for a Big 12 school. And when A&M left and went to the SEC, there's a massive sea change because they couldn't make that argument anymore. It also allowed TCU to rise to prominence. And Baylor had things rolling until recently. That job changed dramatically and became a lot harder. And, oh yeah, by the way, you're not just coaching football at Texas Tech like he'll be coaching football at the car. That doesn't mean he'll be successful. It just means you're evaluating him on his performance on something that's completely different than how he's going to have to perform when he comes to the NFL. That's reality. And other people are speaking from a position of a lack of education on what he was up against and what he has to do now. Which brings me to the other false narrative of the day. Well, it's about Sean McVay and it's about good-looking coaches. Is Freddie Kitchens a catch? Well, it's about young guys and innovative offensive minds. Is Bruce Arians young? Listen, we just had a group of, and only one young quarterback actually won a game last weekend. We just had a group of incredibly young quarterbacks from Deshaun Watson. This we'll have Pat Mahomes, you know, who's in his second year. Baker Mayfield nearly made the playoffs. Lamar Jackson was able to help take the Ravens to the playoffs. Mitch Trubisky, in his second year, just got ousted from the playoffs. Like, go around the league. Carson Wentz would have taken the Eagles to the playoffs last year, and of course would have taken him this year had he not been hurt. Still could play at any time. Jared Goff's the quarterback. Like, look, pay attention to the NFL. It's about the young quarterback and can you get him to achieve his potential. If you can do that, your team will win and you will stay employed, and that's what people want to watch. And you have to find the specific fit for your guy. I don't know how good Matt LaFleur's resume is because they weren't great with the Tennessee Titans. But the idea of a guy who's been with Shanahan, been with McVay, worked with Mariota, played himself in the Arena League, understands the various concepts of it, and is close to the same age or a similar age and a similar mindset of Aaron Rodgers. All they're trying to do in Green Bay is, hey, we'll hire a guy and your job is lead a team, be a guy that people can get behind and communicate and effectively and get the most out of your quarterback. Cliff Kingsbury, really smart guy, former NFL quarterback, former college guy who's worked with some of the best and played in the league. Can he walk in with swag to lead the team? And can he communicate with his quarterback and put Josh Rosen in position to succeed? Bruce Arians. Why is that a great hire? Because Bruce Arians was the one who fixed Ben Roethlisberger when Ben Roethlisberger was a mess off the field and on the field. And do you know who everyone says has always said that Jameis Winston reminds them of as a player? Ben Roethlisberger. Holds the ball too long, big body, can play after contact, tries to make plays down the field, and sometimes that leads to sacks or interceptions, right? Freddie Kitchens figured out how to communicate with Baker Mayfield. They're on the same wavelength. They like each other. And the feeling is that if you can't get Lincoln Riley, you get this guy because they already have a relationship. They'll work together. We'll figure the rest out. Of course, Greg Williams has a far better resume than Freddie Kitchens. It has nothing to do with resume. It has to do with one position and one position only. Doesn't mean they'll all work, but that's the logic behind it. And yeah, there is a certain McVay. Why? Because Jared Goff looked like a bust playing for an old school conservative defensive-minded coach in Jeff Fisher. Hire a guy who can communicate with him, put him in a position to succeed, and how the Rams done the past 2 years. He hasn't picked up a pen in a defensive film room at all. Not one time. That's not what he's hired to do. Even the Fangio hire with the Denver Broncos. You're like, well, he's a defensive guy, Doug. Yes, but the Fangio hire, he's just brought in to do the defense because they got Kubiak, who's basically the head coach of the offense, who's a former quarterback who communicate with the quarterback. All of these hires are the same, but they don't have to do with McVay or how young they are or how good looking they are.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's discuss that Eric Reed thing. Okay, so Eric Reed, part of the collusion lawsuit with Colin Kaepernick, and then he gets back in the league with the Carolina Panthers, and then he said at one point he had been tested 7 times, and then 8 times, and then 9 times. And the first time when he said 7 times, I said, bull. I don't believe it. Right? And look, this isn't just to Eric Reed. This is, hey, we get this from guys all the time. They get popped for a steroid test. You're like, you know, I don't know how it got in there. I don't know what it is. I don't even, Big Poppy. I don't know what I tested positive for. Like, look, if you'll say, hey, well, I'll fully disclose what was found in my urine or in my blood, you'll fully disclose. Like, tell us what was in there. The reason they don't tell us what was in there is because once we find out what's in there, we know that it was an artificial steroid and they had to have taken it for it to be in there. Right? There's a reason they don't do that. It's just like some of these former players who are like, well, you know, the reason that steroid guys like the Barry Bondses and the Roger Clemenses of the world have never come out and said, yes, I did it. Everybody was doing it. It was because, well, one, everybody wasn't doing it. And two, they know it was wrong. And there's lots of other guys that remain silent and not fully disclosed, because if they do, all you have to do, they didn't technically steroid test, right? It wasn't within the collective bargaining agreement. But the way in which you can still find out who was on steroids is go back through the medical records. Every baseball player, every athlete has to take a physical for insurance before any season. College, pro, I believe even high school. And when they do that, they take urine, they take blood. Now, we don't have the ability to know what was in it, but if you want to clear yourself, all you got to do is show us your records. It's in there. They don't do it because they know it was wrong. But this is a really bad look for Eric Reed. This is a really bad look for his movement. And this, by the way, is part of the Kaepernick story, which is you're not being told the whole truth. And there's a translation when you're not being told the whole truth. It means you're lying. Right? This is a joint statement from the NFL and NFLPA. This is not a statement from the NFL that the NFLPA is like, no, we disagree with that statement. This is a joint statement. We take any claim questioning the integrity of our collectively bargained performance-enhancing drug policy seriously. We asked an independent administrator of the policy to review and produce a report on the claims of targeting. There's no evidence of targeting or of any other impropriety with respect to his selecting for testing. Any. Ian Rappaport, who does work for the NFL Network, which technically is owned by the NFL, but Ian Rappaport's also a reporter, and more on the independent administrator's report on Eric Reed's drug test claims. Source said it was determined that Reed was drug tested fewer times than he publicly claimed. Liar, liar, pants on fire. The NFL would have to be idiots. Idiots. To target Eric Reed because of his stance on the national anthem during a time in which he's suing the NFL, suing the league for keeping him out of the league. Like, they would have to be idiots. So first you think they're racist, now you think you're idiots. And you have people that are like, I don't care what the report says, I know they were targeting. Like, then what was the point of having an independent report and having a joint statement between the NFLPA and the NFL? It may feel like he's been tested 7, 8, 9 times. It may feel like he's been targeted. But the reality is, they put it in the computer spits out a bunch of names, and however many times he's been tested, it's fewer. And they didn't do it to, they didn't put that in the report in order to humiliate him, but this is a pretty humiliating source within the report. And you end up doing more damage than you do, more damage to yourself and to your movement. But this is, you know, it's not just Kaepernick wearing pig socks. It's not just Kaepernick and his Castro shirt. It's not just Kaepernick and his girlfriend tweeting a meme about the Ravens owner and the Ravens wanting to bring him in, and Ray Lewis going to the Ravens saying, hey, you should bring him in to be a backup quarterback. And by the way, they went out and got an athletic backup quarterback. His name is Lamar Jackson, and he led him to the playoffs. That could have been you. It's Colin Kaepernick's people have said he wants to be a starter, and he wants starters' money. That's why Seattle wanted nothing to do with him. Like, hey, we have a starting quarterback. That's why Denver, that's one of the things that John Elway was trying to tell you with Denver. Like, look, back before this controversy, we wanted him, but we wanted him at $7 million, not at 14. And it was about money to him. So he made 14, and then they cut him. When you're told the half truth, you're told a lie. Eric Reed may have been tested 5 times instead of 7. But you said 7, so you lied. And you made it out to be like you were being targeted. And now that we have facts, and we have the facts that are not disputed by the NFLPA, right? It's a big thing in this statement. They're not just calling him a liar. The NFLPA is jointly calling him a liar along with the NFL. And the NFLPA sticks up for everybody. Right? They are the union. He is a paying member of that union. And the NFLPA saying that there is no evidence of targeting or any other impropriety with respect to his selection for testing. That is case closed. That is Eric Reed trying to create some sort of controversy when none exists. In our everyone's a victim society, I want to be a victim. Even though he was given an opportunity. And oh yeah, by the way, their defense was a disaster. Not all his fault, but he was part of the defense that had the entire defensive coaching staff fired during the season. Like the NFL does dumb PR things, but like they're not that dumb, right? They're not idiots. You can make mistakes, but they're not idiots. You think Roger Goodell, who things are good, ratings are up, the controversy's kind of gone away, the lawsuit, while it's still taking place, whatever happens, happens. You think Roger Goodell is going to pick up the phone, you know, and sit there and go like, hey, he's back in the league, let's drug test him. Let's get this guy. Here's the other part to it. If you didn't take performance-enhancing drugs, what's the big deal? You're just peeing in a cup. You just pee in a cup. Yeah, they watch you while you pee in a cup. That's part of the protocol. And yeah, you got to do it after an NFL game. It's a little bit tedious. So does every other player in the NFL. That's how they maintain a clean game. If anything, and I've always said this, like, right, if you want to disprove anybody who thinks that you might be doing something, then I actually look at it as I've always looked at this. My mother-in-law, I was pretty yoked up in college. Like I'm in good for a 42-year-old guy, I'm in pretty good shape. When I was in college, I was very big, very strong, very muscular, very athletic. And my mother-in-law once asked my wife, "Doc ever taking steroids?" And my wife waited like 6 months before she actually asked me, said, like, "You know what my mom said?" Well, no, what'd she say? She asked me if you were on steroids. Like, that's like the nicest thing, the coolest thing anyone's ever said to me. If somebody asks you and you're not on steroids, you're on steroids, that must mean that your physique looks pretty damn good, doesn't it? That's like if you ask a woman, you know, if they're real. Remember the famous scene from Seinfeld? They're real and they're spectacular. That's if they look so good that somebody thinks they might be fake, that's actually a compliment. Regardless of which, this is not a compliment to Eric Reed. This is, I don't want to hear from Eric Reed anymore. Because making up facts is lying. And you lied with the intent of making the NFL, trying to make the NFL look bad, look like conniving guys that are vindictive. And they may be conniving, and they may be vindictive, but they're not idiots. Because it would have to be beyond stupid to target Eric Reed after he's suing the league and he gets back in the league with the Carolina Panthers.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Let's get to Greg Cosell, who, of course, works for NFL Films. You can see him on the NFL Matchup Show. Does an amazing job for essentially 40 years. He's broken down films for a living and taught the world what's really going on inside the National Football League. He joins us every week here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. I want to start with Matt LaFleur. Look, Shanahan, with Shanahan for a year, a former quarterback in his own right, with McVay for a year. This year he had his own team, and outsiders would say, hey, look, they're like, you know, bottom five in the league on offense. He's the offensive coordinator. How does that work? You've seen the Titans on tape, know what they had in terms of personnel. What are your thoughts on Matt LaFleur blending with the Green Bay Packers, most notably Aaron Rodgers?
Well, I think, Doug, there's two answers to that. I think when you hire Matt LaFleur, you're hiring a philosophy of offense because his background and his influences are Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay. So you're hiring a philosophy of offense that you believe is effective in the NFL, and it's shown to be effective in the NFL. I think the second part of that question is, how does that fit with the Packers and Aaron Rodgers? You know, I think the one thing about LaFleur and that background is it's very structured. It's very timing and rhythm based. And I think that will there will be some conversations between Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron Rodgers, as great as he is and as great as he can be in any given game, often plays outside of structure, and often plays outside of structure when there's no need to play outside of structure. And that kind of approach does not sit well with the believers in that offensive school of thought.
It can be fascinating to see. Yes, it is. Will you, if you play within the offense, you could be successful, but he hasn't played within the offense. You call it its structure. All right, so in terms of the style of what Cliff Kingsbury, you know, what he's done, has that, is that what others are running? Will that work in the National Football League?
Well, I think there's a couple of issues there, and I think that kind of style of offense is in some ways diametrically opposed to the sort of Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur. That's based more on you run individual plays, the defense isn't really that important, and I've spoken to people who've been on Mike Leach's staff when he was at Texas Tech and ran the air raid, and that's what Cliff Kingsbury's background is, in that they don't even worry about the defense, they call plays. And again, that's a philosophy. Whether that works in the NFL, I guess we're going to find out. The other thing I would really make sure that I do in Arizona, and I don't know if that's going to be up to Cliff Kingsbury or to the front office, but I think offensive line and an offensive line coach becomes critical, because a lot of those offenses in college do not really deal with multiple protection schemes, and you must do that in the NFL.
It's fascinating. I've heard other people point that out, but I've never heard anyone point out as to why the offensive line becomes so much more important. That gives great context to it. It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I know he's a Leach air raid guy, but he's also, you know, worked with Houston. He played in the National Football League. Has he built up his own kind of style outside of Leach's style, or does go ahead.
I don't know him personally, so I can't answer that. I, you know, from what I hear from people, he's very, very smart. So you'd like to think so. You know, veteran coaches, guys who've been around for 35 years in the NFL, have always told me, and I think there's a significant kernel of truth to it, that coaches coach what they know.
Right.
And Cliff Kingsbury is a younger coach. He's predominantly an air raid guy. It doesn't mean that he hasn't spent off seasons trying to learn other things. So I can't speak to that. But that's predominantly his background.
That's great stuff. Greg Cosell joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. All right, let's go with some of the stuff we're going to see this weekend. I look at the Cowboys defense and I think, okay, things that have given the Rams trouble. Do you have a good pass rush, and do you have linebackers that can run and cover somebody like Todd Gurley? And to me, who hasn't watched and broken down the tape the way that you have, and I don't have the football knowledge that you have, I think they can. You've seen it. You know it. Can they?
Yes, I think philosophically the Cowboys are well equipped to play the Rams. And their offense, the Rams' offense, has not been at its highest level over the last, you know, despite their final game of the season, it's not been at its highest level over the last month or so. The Cowboys are built on two elements that are among the best in the NFL, run game and defense. And what that does is it keeps games close. Now, throughout much of the game, they do not ask Dak Prescott to do too much in the passing game. But that profile of running and playing great D and keeping games close makes games winnable in the fourth quarter. And that's when Prescott's running, both by design and improvisation, comes into play. So that's the way the Cowboys play. They will not deviate from their style. I don't believe they're going to come out and feel like, hey, let's start tossing it all over the yard because we have to put up 35. I think they'll stay with their philosophical approach.
That's the voice of Greg Cosell joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Haven't seen the Saints in a couple weeks. Philadelphia Eagles, we've seen. They've had to play their way into the playoffs. How do the Eagles match up with what the Saints like to do?
Well, I think for the Eagles, you know, one of the things they've really done with Nick Foles is they've really gone to the quick passing game. The ball gets out. It really helps their O-line. Their O-line has played very well. I think what you might see, because it's hard to get pass rush pressure on the quick game throws, and this is part of the Saints' MO, is I think you'll see Doug press man coverage on the outside. Try to disrupt the timing of the Eagles' pass game with press man coverage. Who knows, maybe they'll double Ertz on the inside, but I think that they will not give free access to the receivers. They will not let the pass game be clean and rhythmic on the perimeter. And then the idea would be that Nick Foles then holds the ball, and while Nick is very good rhythmically, the longer he holds the ball in the pocket, the less effective he is.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. So is there Foles magic? You mentioned that that he gets rid of the ball much more quickly than Carson Wentz, and that he has to get into a rhythm. You've seen him. He threw two, like I see he throws two picks. Yes, he threw a nice ball. How did you think he played when you break down in totality?
I think he played very solidly. I mean, I think that the way they structure their offense with Nick is reflective of the fact that he has certain strengths and some limitations. And good coaching, what good coaching tries to do is it tries to play to those strengths and it tries to limit those deficiencies. And I think the Eagles do that really, really well with Nick Foles. And that's the reason they play the way they do.
All right, here's the basic scatter report on the Patriots. For my Chargers insiders, right? Like, look, they just play good football. They got three running backs. They got a good offensive line.
Yep.
They'll play fast when they want to. They can play slow. Defensively, they're solid, especially against the run. Really good in coverage with no real pass rush. Okay, if that's the style and it's bad weather in New England, I look at the Chargers and I'm like, wow, they have better personnel. But is that better personnel able to beat the Patriots in New England, something that happens so seldom in the playoffs?
Again, now you're getting into just a discussion of personnel and tactics, and it's hard for me to respond in terms of, well, home field advantage.
Sure.
I don't know exactly what that means, other than teams tend to win more at home. But I think that the Patriots are a little bit different offense. They run the ball more. They play more with two backs, 21 personnel. And, I think that their pass game is nowhere near as explosive as it once was. I don't think Gronkowski is quite the same guy as he was. I think that he doesn't redirect as well, that you can prevent him from being a big factor in the game. I think that they match up pretty well. They're a team that plays with six defensive backs pretty much all the time. This past week they played with seven. That was specific to Lamar Jackson. They'll go back to playing with six, which they've done over 50% of their defensive snaps this year.
Last thing, Colts go into Kansas City. How does that Colts defense, everybody's talking about Colts defense is massively improved. How do they match up with the speed of Kansas City?
Well, they play predominantly zone. They've actually increased their blitz frequency. Kenny Moore has become a really important player in their sub-package defense as their slot corner, as a cover player, and as a blitzer. When you play Kansas City, you must prevent Tyreek Hill from being a factor from the inside slot, from the slot and the inside slot. That's where the Chiefs like to line him up. He can run by people. You can't let him get over the top of you. They're a zone-based team. They'll be very conscious of that. And then you have Kelce, who's in a similar situation, not the speed player, but he also works really effectively inside. I think those are the two players that you must take away.
Great stuff. Listen, I know your phone's ringing because you probably have 15 more of these to do, but we appreciate any amount of time that you spend with us. Greg Cosell from NFL Films. Thanks so much, Greg.
Appreciate it, Doug. Thanks.
That's Greg Cosell.